Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive. You guys sent over some fascinating stuff from a CISSP study guide, Domain 3 to be exact, all about security architecture and engineering. And since I know that's right up your alley, I've got expert speaker here to help us break it all down. Are you ready to, like, design Fort Knox for data?
I am so ready. This domain is all about baking security right into the DNA of systems. No more slapping it on as an afterthought, right? This is about understanding the core design principles.
So it's less about specific tools and more about the overall approach, the mindset.
Exactly. The guide calls them secure design principles, 11 of them, actually. Can we ditch the jargon for a sec and, like, make this relevant for everyone? Why should someone who's not a tech whiz care about this stuff?
Right, because at the end of the day, we all have data to protect, right?
Exactly. And these principles are actually really intuitive. They apply to way more than just computer systems. Think of the principle of least privilege.
Okay, break that one down for me.
It's like, you wouldn't give your house keys to every single person you meet, would you?
Definitely not.
It's about giving people just the right keys, the absolute minimum access they need to do their jobs, and nothing more. In the digital world, that translates to limiting access to data and systems.
So, less potential damage if something goes wrong, right?
Exactly. Fewer keys, less risk. And this applies not just to people, but to systems too. Each part should only have the bare minimum access it needs.
So it's like compartmentalizing access to make things more secure.
You got it. And that leads us to defense in depth. Ever trying to break into a castle with, like, multiple walls and moats?
Way harder than just one flimsy door, that's for sure.
Exactly. It's layers of security measures. Think firewalls, intrusion detection, all those things working together to make it much, much harder to break in.
So even if one layer is breached, you've got backups.
Precisely. Yeah. Plan B, plan C. You want to make it as tough as possible for the bad guys.
Makes sense. Create a system that can take a punch or two.
Exactly. Okay, now imagine that despite all those defenses, something still manages to fail.
Uh-oh, that doesn't sound good.
That's where fail securely comes in. Picture a bank vault. Power outage, does the door swing open?
No way, it locks down even tighter. But...
Exactly. Even in a failure, the system defaults to a secure mode.
That's reassuring. So you're not just trying to prevent failures, but also controlling what happens if they do.
Exactly. And this actually connects to the idea of secure defaults. Think about when you get a new phone or laptop. Should you have to be a cybersecurity expert just to make it safe to use?
Definitely not. It should be secure straight out of the box.
You got it. Systems should be designed with security as the default, not an extra option you have to hunt down.
So you're not relying on everyone being a tech whiz to keep their data safe. It's about making it easy to be secure.
100%. This isn't about making things impossible to access. It's about ensuring every access is legit.
Okay, I'm liking this approach. What's next on the list of security must-haves?
Separation of duties.
Yeah.
Especially relevant in today's world. Think about corporate espionage, whistleblowers. You don't want any one person to have too much control.
Checks and balances, but for data. Okay, I see why that's crucial.
Right. The more eyes you have on sensitive stuff, the harder it is to hide anything shady, right?
Wow.
And this ties in with keep it simple and small. It's not just about minimalist design. It's about reducing complexity to minimize vulnerabilities.
So the simpler the system, the easier it is to secure.
Think of it like this. A bicycle is way easier to fix than a spaceship, right? Fewer moving parts mean fewer things to go wrong. It's the same in the digital world.
Okay, that visual really helps.
By keeping things streamlined, you reduce what we call the attack surface, making it way easier to spot and fix problems. And this actually connects to two huge GG principles for our digital world. Zero trust and trust but verify.
Zero trust sounds kind of intense, like walking around in a digital hazmat suit.
It might feel that way, but it's really about facing reality. Don't automatically trust anyone or anything on your network without verification.
So even inside the company network, no more assumed trust just because you're on the inside.
You got it. Every single user, every device needs to be authenticated every time.
Wow. So it's constant vigilance, like security checkpoints at every level. I get why that's more secure, but also that sounds like it could get a little inconvenient.
True, there's a balance. But the goal is to make security as frictionless as possible while still being super effective.
So it's not about making things impossible to access, but verifying every single access attempt.
Exactly. And that's where trust but verify comes in. Never blindly trust anything digital. Always double check.
So it's like backing up that trust with solid verification, not just hoping for the best.
Exactly. That's where things like multi-factor authentication and device profiling are key. Multiple layers of checks. Especially since the lines between the inside and outside of a network are so blurry now.
Right, with everyone working remotely, on the go.
Exactly. It's not about building a bigger wall around your network, because the network isn't always a physical place anymore.
Okay, so what do we do? How do we adapt to that?
That's where micro-segmentation comes in. Mm. It's like instead of one big castle, you divide your network into smaller, isolated zones.
So if one part gets compromised, the whole kingdom doesn't fall.
Exactly. Each zone gets its own security controls, its own access rules, based on how sensitive the data is in that zone. More granular, more adaptable.
I'm seeing the pattern here for sure. It's all about layers and thinking ahead. Now, you mentioned a term that sounds really serious, air gap. Are we talking like a digital Faraday cage or something?
It's about as close to complete isolation as you can get digitally. Physically isolating a system or network, no wired or wireless connections to the outside.
Wow, so the ultimate disconnect.
Exactly, for when even the smallest risk is unacceptable.
Okay, so we've gone from castles and moats to air gaps.
Okay.
That's a lot of security. I do have one more term I want to unpack. Privacy by design. Is that different from just privacy?
It's way more than a buzzword. It's about building privacy into the system's DNA from the very beginning.
So not just an afterthought or a box to check on a form.
You're getting it. With privacy by design, or PBD, you're thinking about privacy throughout the entire process, from the initial design all the way through to how the system is ultimately shut down.
So every decision, every feature, you're thinking, how does this impact user privacy?
Exactly. You're anticipating and mitigating privacy risks at every step. And there are 7 core principles to PBD to guide you.
7. Okay, lame a bunch.
First up, proactive, not reactive. You want to head off privacy problems before they even exist.
Makes sense. Like they say, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
And the second principle is all about making privacy the default. Your system should automatically protect user data. No need for users to jump through hoops.
Yes. Make it easy to be private.
Right. And that leads to the third principle, which, like we talked about, is embedding privacy into the design itself. Every line of code, every design choice.
Okay, so it sounds like this isn't just about following regulations. It's about a true commitment to user privacy.
Exactly. And here's a good one. Principle number 4, full functionality. You don't have to choose between a great user experience and protecting privacy. You can and should have both.
Okay, now that's what I like to hear. So you're saying I can have my cake and eat it too.
Absolutely. Now, principle number 5 is end-to-end security. We want to make sure that privacy is baked in from the moment data is collected to when it's deleted.
So we're talking about the entire life cycle of the data, not just one part.
You got it. Next up, and this is a big one, is visibility and transparency. Users should always know how their data is being used and protected.
No more shady practices hiding in the fine print.
Exactly. And last but not least, respect for user privacy. Users are in control of their data. They should be able to access it, correct it, delete it.
Empowerment. That's what we like to hear. So to sum up, these 7 principles are all about shifting toward a more user-centric, proactive approach to privacy.
Exactly. And it's a much-needed shift, don't you think? Especially now when data privacy feels more important than ever.
Absolutely. We've covered secure design and privacy, but there's one more biggie from the document, shared responsibility. And to be honest, that phrase makes me nervous. Like, who's really in charge here?
You're right to be cautious. This is especially important in the world of cloud computing.
Okay, so the cloud adds a whole other layer of complexity, right?
It does. With traditional IT, companies were in charge of all things security, right? But with the cloud, you've got the cloud provider and the customer.
And that's where the sharing gets tricky, right? Who's responsible for what?
Okay, so generally, the provider secures the underlying infrastructure, the physical servers, the data centers, the networks. It's like the foundation of a house. They make sure that's solid.
Okay, so they're like the landlord, making sure the building is in good shape, structurally sound. What about the tenant?
The customer is responsible for everything else. The operating systems, the applications, the data itself.
So even though the data is in the cloud, the customer is still ultimately in charge of its security.
Exactly. It's a partnership. The provider offers a secure foundation, but the customer needs to build securely on top of that.
Okay, so communication is key here, right? No one wants to get stuck in a blame game if something goes wrong.
You're preaching to the choir. That's where those service level agreements, the SLAs, come in.
Right, the SLAs. Everyone talks about them, but does anyone actually read them?
They're basically contracts. They outline exactly who's responsible for what, especially when it comes to security. Think of them like a prenup for the cloud.
Okay, so you're setting those expectations and responsibilities up front. I like that.
It helps avoid confusion and finger pointing down the line. So shared responsibility is all about making those roles and responsibilities crystal clear from day one.
That makes sense. But the cloud world changes so quickly. What's secure today might not be tomorrow, right?
Exactly. Which brings us to the last term I wanted to unpack. Secure Access Service Edge, or SACE.
Okay, I'll be honest. Whenever I hear SACE, I think of something you'd order at a fancy sushi restaurant.
I feel you. It's not the most intuitive acronym, but it's a big deal in cybersecurity. Basically, SACE is all about merging networking and security into a single cloud service.
So instead of separate solutions, you're bringing them together.
Exactly. And because it lives in the cloud, it's super scalable, super flexible, something that traditional solutions just can't match.
Okay, that makes sense. But why is everyone so excited about SACE now? What's changed?
Think about it. Cloud computing, work from anywhere, bring your own device. The old perimeter security model just doesn't cut it anymore.
Because the castle walls are gone when everyone's working from coffee shops and airports.
Exactly. SACE is about securing the access itself, not just the perimeter, no matter where the user is or what device they're on.
So it's future-proofing security in a way, right?
100%.
Yeah.
We've gone from medieval castles to the cloud in like an hour.
It's a lot, I know. But the good news is, these ideas, as complex as they might seem, they all work together. It's all connected. It really is amazing how it all ties together. But with all this cloud, zero trust, SACE, does this mean traditional security is dead? Are we ditching firewalls and intrusion detection altogether?
That's the million-dollar question. It's not about ditching the old stuff entirely. It's about evolving how we use it.
So building on the old foundations.
Exactly. The castle walls are still important, but they're not enough on their own. You need guards on those walls. You need intel. You need secure communication within the castle itself.
Okay, so a more holistic, layered approach.
Oh,
I like it. And yeah. It sounds like that requires a whole new mindset, too.
Absolutely. It's moving away from just trying to prevent attacks and more towards being able to withstand and bounce back from them.
Resilience. That's the word I was looking for. Which makes me think about something you said earlier. Security is a journey, not a destination. What does that actually mean in practice?
It means never letting your guard down. The threat landscape is always changing. New vulnerabilities, new attack methods. The bad guys never sleep.
So it really is like that cat and mouse game, but with much, much higher stakes.
Exactly. You always have to be adapting, learning from what's happened, and trying to stay one step ahead of the bad guys.
So if security is this ongoing journey, where do we even begin?
It starts with a solid foundation, which is why those secure design principles we talked about are so crucial, building security into the very core of your systems from day one.
No more adding security as a last-minute thought.
Exactly. But it can't stop there. You need a rock-solid risk management process.
Yeah.
Identifying, assessing, and mitigating threats.
So constantly evaluating and reevaluating your security posture.
Constantly. What are your most critical assets? What are the threats to those assets? What are the controls you have in place to stop those threats?
Prioritizing what matters most.
You got it. That's where threat modeling, vulnerability assessments, all of that comes in.
Constantly testing, poking, and prodding your own defenses.
Absolutely. You can't just set it and forget it.
Okay, so we're talking about active security, not passive security.
Think of it like a muscle.
Mm.
You have to keep exercising it to make it stronger. And that means training, making sure everyone in the organization understands security.
It's everyone's responsibility, not just the IT department's problem.
100%. So we've got the solid foundation, the risk management, the culture of awareness. What else do we need for this security journey?
I'm ready for the next step.
Adaptation. That's the key.
Adapt or, well, you know the rest. But how do we actually do that when it comes to security?
Remember how we talked about the threat landscape constantly evolving? What worked yesterday might not work tomorrow.
So you're saying we can't just rest on our laurels.
Exactly. Be proactive. Stay up to date on the latest threats, the new vulnerabilities, the latest attack trends.
And be ready to pivot and adjust those security controls as needed.
Exactly. It's not just about having a plan. It's about having a plan that can evolve.
So having the right tools and technologies is important, but it's not enough. We need the right mindset too.
You're getting it. And that's where things like DevOps, agile development, all of that comes into play.
We're bringing it back to development.
Absolutely. How we build and deploy software has a huge EE impact on security.
So we need to be thinking about security from the very beginning of the development process, not just tacking it on at the end.
Exactly. Build it in from the ground up.
Okay, so it really is about that cultural shift. Security can't be an afterthought. It needs to be part of the DNA of the entire organization.
That's what it's all about, moving away from that old perimeter-based model and embracing a more proactive, adaptive approach.
It sounds like this security journey is never really over.
And that's the truth. It's an ongoing process, always learning, always adapting. But trust me, it's a journey worth taking.
I believe it. We've only just scratched the surface here, but I feel like we've covered a ton of ground. What else do you think is important for our listeners to remember as they continue their own security journeys?
Well, even though we've covered a lot, there are a few crucial points I want everyone to take away from this deep dive.
I'm all ears. Give us those golden nuggets of wisdom.
First things first, security isn't just an IT issue, it's a business issue.
Right, because at the end of the day, it's about protecting the organization's most valuable assets, and that impacts everyone.
100%. And that leads to my second point. Everyone has a role to play in maintaining security. From the CEO to the intern, everyone needs to be aware and engaged.
Security is a team sport.
Exactly. And that brings me to my third point, and this is a big one. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Security can be incredibly complex. No one is expected to be an expert on everything. There are so many incredible resources out there, industry groups, online communities, consultants.
Like that old saying, it takes a village, right?
Exactly. And this
Yeah.
is definitely a time to lean on your village. And finally, always remember that the best security, it's proactive security.
Don't wait for a four-alarm fire to start thinking about fire safety.
Exactly. And a great place to start, if you're feeling lost, is with a risk assessment.
Okay, so back to basics. Sounds like a plan.
Figure out what you're protecting, what could go wrong, and what you're already doing to prevent it. From there, you can prioritize and create a roadmap.
A roadmap, I love it. Like we've reached the summit of this security mountain, and now we can see the path ahead.
That's a great way to put it. And remember, the path might have some twists and turns, but as long as you keep those core principles in mind, the ones we've been talking about, you're going to be well on your way to building a much more secure organization.
This has been incredible. I feel like I've leveled up my security knowledge for sure.
I'm so glad to hear that. It's been a pleasure diving into this with you.
The pleasure was all mine. And to everyone listening, we hope you feel ready to tackle your own security journeys.
Stay curious, stay vigilant, and until next time, stay secure.
And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive. We'll see you next time, everyone.